What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 116. This is the review of the movie Sacred Cow Part 2. If you didn't check out Part 1, go ahead and listen to that last week. It's pretty good. It's basically a movie all about regenerative agriculture. It's kind of a hard word to say. But it's really just making our soil healthy. So make our nation healthy and our world healthy. So it's a really good movie. Me and Tom both liked it. But first, the article of the week this week is titled, Vegans are 43% more likely to suffer bone fractures, study suggests. And you can find this article on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com. And this was a relevant article because the whole plant-based versus a more omnivorous or even carnivorous diet came up a lot during this episode, just because monocropping is all plant-based and people think that's very nutritious. So this article kind of shows how it's not. So Tom, do you want to kind of just talk about it real quick?
Yeah, sorry if you guys can hear my dogs playing in the background. I guess they're testing each other's bone density. Their bone density is fine because lucky for them, they're carnivores and they get lots of meat, including bones, in their diet. So
they're good.
Yeah, so I mean, not a surprise that vegans are more likely to suffer from like bone fractures. I mean, granted, this isn't the best study. It's an epidemiological study. I'm going to point that out, even if it, you know, gives us results that we like. So it's not the best study. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things I found really interesting were that people that suffered a lot of bone fractures in the like vegetarian and vegan community were like had a very, very low BMI, like an unhealthy low BMI, which it kind of suggests to me like, okay, so they're probably malnourished. If you're super skinny getting bone fractures, I would think it's more likely to happen in like people that are obese and overweight, people that are putting a lot of stress on their, you know, their bones. Mm-hmm. So I found that pretty interesting. The other thing it mentions, like, yeah, low calcium, low protein in their diet. It's not that there's not a lot of calcium in their diet, it's that the calcium's not bioavailable. And even if you do get a lot of protein on a vegetarian diet, you're not getting the amount of amino acids, like the proper ratios. So, again, it's like it goes back to that bioavailability factor. Like, it's just not the best. And one thing that the article doesn't mention, but I'm willing to bet plays a really big role, is vitamin D. Because, like, these people probably do exercise more and stuff like that, but there's no vitamin D in the plant kingdom. You can get a little bit in mushrooms, but that vitamin D isn't the right form. So the only way you can get the right type of form from vitamin D from your diet is either going to be through meat sources, like liver is a really good source, or from the sun. Sun's the best source. But, you know, in a pinch, you can get vitamin D through, like, something like cod liver oil, something like that.
Yeah. No, I think those are great points, and that's exactly what I was going to mention. It's not that a vegan diet is inherently low in calcium, because that's what everyone assumes when they hear problems with bones. They go, oh, you need more calcium in the diet. But that's actually not really true. It's a whole combination of calcium with vitamin D and vitamin K that kind of tells our body what to do with the minerals we ingest. So yeah, vegan diets do have some access to calcium, and you can even supplement with it if you wanted, but without the vitamin D and without the vitamin K, your body's not going to properly deposit that calcium within the bones, making them weaker. And on top of that, Tom mentioned this as well, the quality of the protein in a vegan diet is complete crap. We've talked about it in the past, we have a whole podcast on the nutritional deficiencies of a vegetarian diet, and we touched on the protein quality of plants in that podcast, so check that out if you want. But, our bones are over 60% protein. So if you're not getting vitamin D, you're not getting vitamin K, and the quality of amino acids you're ingesting is poor, Like, no shit, your bones are going to break. That's just what I think.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we're in total agreement. I mean, it's just a bad diet for, like, a number of different factors. Did you read any of the comments in this article?
No, I never spend time in comments.
It's funny, I just read a couple of them. They're like, the first one was saying that, don't believe this article, it's all BS. It was funded by Big Meat, the oil, and like a couple other like industries. It's like, okay, I don't think all these industries combined to form this one study. It's not even that well funded of a study. It's only looking at like 50,000 people.
Yeah, it's not that huge, yeah.
Yeah, just like some conspiracy theorist just saying like, don't believe it, it's all government influence. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's funny. Only if they knew, like, Big Oil really is making money off a plant-based diet. If only people knew that. But we actually talk about it. It's probably a good segue into today's episode. So we talk about it a little bit throughout the next episode, just all about the problems with the plant-based diet and really the way you get these plants, which is called, you know, monocrop. So big fields of corn, big fields of soy, all that type of stuff. So, yeah, that's what we talk about this week. Did you want to mention anything more with this article?
No, I think we covered everything. I mean, you get to learn everything you need to know based off the headline itself. Just vegans 43% more likely to suffer bone fractures.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's Article of the Week. Again, you can find it on TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. So check that out. And yeah, this is part two of our review of Sacred Cow. So listen, I hope you guys learned something.
So the next part of the film that I wanted to discuss was just kind of like the ethical argument about eating meat. This has like a vegetarian, and she's talking about how she's trying to grow her own lettuce in her garden, but slugs keep eating it. So she's basically forced to come to the conclusion. She has two choices. She either has to kill the slugs or not grow lettuce. So unfortunately, she couldn't bring herself to kill the slugs, so she just stopped growing lettuce. All right. I mean, hey, that's definitely first world problems right there. Not everybody for around sure. The world is. Yeah, not everybody around the world has that type of thing. And also our ancestors, you know, that wouldn't be a choice for them. It's either kill animals or die yourself. They're going to choose to kill the animals.
Yep.
Whatever. So the next time she goes to the store to buy lettuce, she breaks down crying because she realized that these farmers made the choice to kill the slugs. And she was supporting them. And by supporting them, like, she's supporting the death of animals. So the reason like this hit her like so like made it so her emotion or made her so emotional was because like so much of her identity was connected to being a vegan. Like, you know, I don't kill animals. That's not what I do. Like, I'm a good person, you know, that type of thing. But once she realized that she was in fact killing animals, her entire identity was like a lie. So she's going through like an identity crisis at this point. So she became very emotional as a result of this. And I think that's like, has one of the biggest things to do with the psychology of being like a vegetarian or a vegan is like you just tie so much. It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle and it becomes your identity. So I think that's why a lot of people are so connected to that diet and are just so opposed to anything, any information that goes against them. Because if like any information that goes against like their diet is really like an attack on their character and their identity.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And this lady, she was the author of the book called The Vegetarian Myth. I think her name's like Lierre Keith, something like that. And her book is awesome. Like, I cannot recommend that book enough. If you have any vegan friends out there, any vegetarian friends, or even people thinking about going vegan, please recommend that book, The Vegetarian Myth. You know, maybe I'll link that book on this post to the website so you can go check it out there. But it's a great book, and it outlines, like what Tom said, all the kind of mental hula hoops you have to jump through to be a vegan. Like, oh, I won't kill animals, but I'm not going to think about all the farmers that did kill animals for these plants. And it's just, like Tom said, it's part of their identity. And I think that's why they're so passionate. And it makes sense, but they're just misguided. I think vegans and hardcore vegetarians, they are, I don't know, first world, misguided, ignorant fools. Genuinely. And I know they have good intentions. A lot of them do. But they've been led astray. Just led down the wrong road.
Yeah, I honestly think that... because, like, I don't have any vegan friends. But my fiance, some of her best friends are. And, like, hey, we get along about a lot of stuff. Like, you know, we see, like, eye to eye on a lot of issues. But it's just, like, our solution to these issues are completely backwards. Like, you know, And yeah, there is a lot of similarities there. It's just, I don't know. And you can kind of tell, like, these people were not born on farms, weren't raising their own animals.
Oh, God, no. Uh-uh.
Yeah, like, I would really challenge them to, like, hey, grow your own garden and see if you can do it without killing any animals.
Yeah, and see if you can do it without animal products, like bone meal, or something that actually keeps your soil healthy. Like, good luck, because it won't last long. And you'll starve if that's your only source of nutrition.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Because, like, yeah, you need the bone meal. And, yeah, like, you pretty much will starve to death if that's your only way to get your food.
And I think, real quick, how they had a gentleman, I don't remember his name, but he was from Africa, and he talked about how the plant-based narrative pushed forward by a lot of American companies. And I forget this lady. She's this white, rich lady, probably from, I don't know, SF or Berkeley or some shit. And she's really pushing forward a plant-based narrative. I think she runs a plant-based company. And he was saying how this isn't possible in, like, places like Africa and places where we can't go down to the local mall and buy supplements. We can't go down to a local grocery store and buy everything we need. Like, we need animal agriculture in our lives or our children would starve. And I think that's such a detach these vegans and vegetarians have. They think everyone lives in this, like, westernized world where we have access to, honestly, abundance of everything. But that's just so not the case in the vast majority of the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. I had notes on that, but I wasn't even going to... I forgot to include it in the show notes here. But, yeah, that's a great point because, yeah, not everybody has even just enough access to food overall.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be missing a lot of key nutrients. And then another factor is, like, even if you are becoming nutrient deficient, do you even have access to a doctor that you can go see, like, immediately that can point out, oh, hey, you're extremely low in iron. This is what you need to do. Like, that's another thing. You might not even have access to a doctor. Like, your closest doctor might be, you know, a week away. So you're not going to contact them all the time unless it's really a life or death situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, this really isn't sustainable anywhere other than if you live in a city and you can go buy all these supplements, because you need a supplement. You need B12. Most likely you're going to need iron. Just trying to stay away from the nutritional point of this podcast.
But we have a podcast on the nutritional deficiencies of a plant-based diet. So check that out if you want to learn all the shit you would need to supplement with to be a vegan, because it's a lot of things.
But yeah, definitely. I'm glad you brought that up because I kind of forgot to. Yeah, you can't do this everywhere. You can pretty much only do it in major cities.
Yep.
Or if you have access to, like, an Amazon. All right. So the next part I wanted to point out is it's called the Local Butcher Shop. That's the name of it. And it's in Berkeley, California. So first off, this butcher shop is doing things the right way. It only buys whole carcasses. That means the entire animal, from ranches within 150 miles. So they sell bones. They make their own bone broth. They sell organs. And they're pretty much trying to encourage their customers to eat the entire animal, eat nose to tail. So that's, like, that's what me and Tyson both do. We encourage everybody else to eat that way. It's the healthiest way to live. And it's also, you're not being wasteful. And that butcher shop also teaches, like, butchering classes. So, I mean, that's something I'd be really interested in taking. Mm-hmm. Just to be closer to your animals. Just to be closer to your food. And just grow a greater appreciation with, like, the animal itself, with your food. Berkeley, California, there's a lot of vegans there, and they've had a lot of protesters at this butcher shop. So protesters wrapped themselves up in plastic wrap and covered themselves in fake blood and were just kind of, like, laying there, making themselves look like meat that you would buy from the store. And they were doing this on a daily basis. One thing that they had was, like, a candle vigil, basically like a funeral in front of the store one day for all the animals that they killed. And they were just there on a daily basis. And the store is just kind of going crazy. Like, what are we doing wrong? We did everything the right way. They were having a really hard time just trying to figure out what these protesters even wanted. And the goal of these protesters is to make Berkeley 100% meat-free.
By 2020, which it's not. So they lost. Good job, vegans.
So finally, the owners of the butcher shop were able to meet with somebody, or one of the protesters, and they came to an agreement. So in order for the protesters to stop, they agreed to hang a sign on the front of their store that read, "Attention, animal lives are their right. Killing them is violent and unjust, no matter how it's done." So the vegans consider this to be a major victory. The news went worldwide. And as a result of like all this like free publicity, basically, the local butcher shop had its best month ever. So I guess it was a win-win.
I guess. I mean, an argument that I don't know. I don't talk to a lot of vegans nowadays because it's like I don't want to lose brain cells. You know, these brain cells are pretty damn precious to me. So it's just I don't even like waste my breath most of the time. But how that little saying, how, you know, animal lives are their right, killing them is violent and unjust. So how we kill cows normally in a slaughterhouse is pretty, for the most part, I'm sure there are some bad operations out there, but it's pretty, what's the word, humane. You know, it's kind of like a bolt to the head. They're dead instantly. Okay, cow's dead, boom. You know how cows die on the pasture? Like these natural cows that really don't exist because we've, you know, tamed them so much? Wolves. You know how they die? Old age. They get left by the herd on top of a hill to die. They freeze in the middle of the night. They bleed out when cows are gnawing on their legs. What's, well, like, nice about that?
Yeah, most likely they're going to be eaten alive.
What is, like, what? Like, if you really cared about cows, wouldn't you? We're all going to die. Every cow is going to die. Like, why don't they ever, like, consider that?
And not to mention, like, we just talked about it earlier, how in order to grow plants, animals must die. So at least that this meat is going somewhere. Like, the rodents, the snakes, all those other animals that are dying, the insects that are dying to grow some corn and soy, those lives are completely wasted. When it comes to beef or any other animal sources that we eat, at least we're getting that nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it comes to beef, we use the entire animal. Like, the skin is used for leather. Like, I mean, leather is everywhere. We use it on all sorts of different materials. The meat, we all eat. And if some of that leftover meat might go to things like dog food or something like that. Those bones, a lot of people make bone broth. Some of that bones are, like, grinded down into bone meal for the soil. Like, all the organs, some organs we eat, a lot of the organs that we are not eating, those get converted into medicines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we are using the entire animal in this way, whereas opposed to the animals that they're killing to grow some corn and soy, is just completely wasted. And it has to be wasted because those animals are dying from poisoning and we can't eat them.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. Their logic is so flawed in so many ways.
Yeah, so, like, honestly, the ethical argument is to eat beef. And I've talked to people about this before. Like, me and my fiance could survive off of one cow. If I went and bought one cow, that would feed me and her for the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one death that will attribute to me and her living. How many insects, how many rodents, how many birds and all these other animals are dying for you to eat corn and soy every day?
Thousands, millions, billions. Yeah.
So just from like a numbers standpoint, it doesn't make sense either. I think we took care of the ethical issue pretty good, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so let's move on to the environment. I mean, this is a big one. Everybody knows that cows produce methane and like how that's destroying the environment. Well, I mean, it's partially true. Cows do produce methane, but is that methane bad for the environment? Not really. So methane is basically just carbon and hydrogens. So once those carbon and hydrogens go into the atmosphere, they kind of split apart. The carbons bind with oxygen, become CO2 for plants to breathe in. Those hydrogens are bind with oxygen and become water, H2O. Those carbons and get breathed in by the plants. The water falls down so those plants can grow. And then what happens? Animals eat them. So it's just a perfect cycle. It's perfectly natural. It's been going on this planet for as long as there has been life on this planet. So that type of methane, completely natural. It's been going on for millions and millions of years. Love the documentary because it kind of perfectly demonstrated that. It showed the little methane going into the atmosphere, CO2 and water coming back down.
Yeah, that made the carbon cycle, which is pretty complex, that made it actually digestible, which I did like that part of the movie. And then it touched on like fossil fuels, and because people make, especially vegetarians and vegans, again, they make this argument that cows are destroying the planet from the methane they produce and actually burp out methane. No one seems to understand that, but it's like, if that was true, ruminants and way more ruminants in the form of bison and buffalo have been on this planet for millions of years. So if they were causing this global warming, like, I don't know, catastrophe that's happening nowadays, global warming would have started millions of years ago. But global warming and this excess carbon in the atmosphere didn't start until we started mining fossil fuels. We added, like, artificial carbon on top of the carbon cycle. And that was really the problem with it. We kind of unbalanced the equation.
So, yeah, by digging up these, like, fossil fuels from deep underneath the earth, where this carbon would be safely stored, now we're digging that stuff up and burning it. So now this carbon's going into the atmosphere, greatly increasing that and greatly increasing the amount of greenhouse gases that are in the atmosphere. Like, this is extremely unnatural, and it's only been going on for, what, like 150 years, something like that?
Yeah, and it's, like, surprisingly, that's when the amount of carbon in the atmosphere started to increase. Like, it's not the cows doing it, it's us doing it. Humans, who are too smart for their own good, who dug up these, you know, it's just fossil fuel, just a bunch of carbons. Like, we just dug that stuff up and burned it, and now we have, like I said, the equation isn't balanced anymore.
It's a lot more technical than when we're making it sound, because honestly, like, the carbons aren't the same. Like, the methane that's coming from these fossil fuels don't get broken down the same way as the methane that's coming from cows. And it's not just cows. We produce methane. I'm pretty sure almost every living creature on this planet produces methane. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, cows get blamed for it, but, I mean, like, everything does.
Yeah, no one wants to talk about, like, how, like, vegans have cats and dogs. Like, yeah, if we really reduce methane, you know, we need to kill your cats and dogs, too. Because they produce methane just as much as cows, you know?
Humans produce methane.
Yeah, exactly. And kill our friends.
Like, now we got to start killing each other off.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy's really gassy. You know, he's destroying the environment.
He's got to go.
All right, so we just talked about a lot of things that are wrong. So let's talk about the one thing to kind of solve all these problems. And that's known as regenerative agriculture. And that's basically nature. That's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to mimic nature, trying to make these grazing animals live the way that they would have, or the way that they have been for millions and millions of years until we change the system. So basically, grazing animals, that's things like cows, camels, whatever ruminant it is, depends on the country that you're in, they're moved around often. So land is never overgrazed and is allowed to grow back before the animals are allowed back in that area. So naturally, things like wolves or lions would force this behavior, because these animals would constantly be running away from the predators. Like, today, like, farmers can use electrical fences to kind of just, like, block where they can and can't go.
Yeah. Just to touch on it real quick. So the main thing with regenerative agriculture, which Tom just touched on, is it's different from mono agriculture, because mono agriculture is just one plant on this entire field. Regenerative agriculture combines actual animals and plants. It uses them both on the same lot, which is how it's supposed to be. You're never supposed to just wipe out an entire field for one plant. That's just never how nature intended it.
Yeah, that's a good clarification. So one of the major benefits of this is it creates biodiversity. So now you have flowers growing there. So, hey, pollinators like bees can go there. You have manure. So not only is that great for the soil, but now there's insects. And insects are pretty much one of the bottom of the food system. So, if, like, there's a lot of things that, like, rodents, birds can eat, and now there's rodents and birds, and they're not getting poisoned from eating these poisoned insects, now you got snakes and, like, larger birds, and you got predators there. So an entire ecosystem is created from this form of agriculture. So there's no pesticides, and this thing supports life and not death. I mean, that's the way life would, if humans didn't exist, this is what the planet would turn into, and it would be a much cleaner and safer place. So another benefit of ruminant animals is that they upcycle nutrients. So they turn things like sunlight, water, and grass, which are all pretty much worthless to us by themselves, into very, very nutrient-dense food sources that provide every single nutrient humans need. So boom, another thing that they do. All we have to do, we raise these ruminant animals, we can survive off of them alone.
Yeah, that nutrient upcycling, we've talked about it, I mean, we talked about it in the past for sure, but it is, it's like the cow's magic trick. They turn, I mean, we can use water, but humans aren't doing nothing with just sunlight and grass, trust me. I had an argument one time, well, a conversation with a guy one time about, he was like, well, you know, the source of all life is really grass. And I was like, okay, like he was going plant-based. And I was like, if that's true, bro, go eat grass and tell me how long you last. Humans do not have the teeth. We do not have the GI tract or the stomach to actually break down grass. So good luck, you'll die. Well, you'll probably throw up real quick and then you'll die eventually. But cows do. That's like their magic trick. They turn grass into ribeye steak. Like, I mean, they are great and just, I don't know. I love cows.
Yeah, I mean, they turn a bunch of nutrients that we can't use into every single nutrient that we use and we need, and in the most bioavailable way.
Yep.
And pretty much grass can be grown damn near everywhere. Like, there's very, very few places that we can't grow grass, whereas there are very, very limited places where we can grow corn, soy, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And that amount of land is reducing all the time because of how bad those things are for the soil. Also, this type of agriculture, this regenerative agriculture, doesn't need input from fossil fuels. Like, we don't need these synthetic fertilizers. We don't need farming equipment. We don't need tractors. We don't need anything like that. And there's not a lot of processing going on from just slaughtering cows and producing meat. It's very, very limited on the amount of fossil fuels, whereas every single step of the food chain when it comes to, like, corn, soy, and wheat, every single one of them need fossil fuels.
Yeah, it's all mechanized nowadays.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's much better from the for the environment that way. And, I mean, I feel like the biggest thing is the soil quality. Once our soil health goes away, our entire planet is, like, screwed. There's no coming back from that, really. So once the soil quality is significantly healthier, not only does it provide a lot more nutrients, but it retains a lot more water. So this reduces the amount of water that this land needs. And now that this land has a lot more life on it, it's able to take a lot more carbon out of the atmosphere.
I think that is like the biggest thing. And I think I did actually like about the movie is it was optimistic about a solution to this problem. And it had plenty of examples of farms and huge areas of land where they introduced regenerative agriculture and they saw their lands just prosper. They saw the soil grow. They saw plant diversity come back. They saw animal diversity come back. And it was like, hey, look what we can do. And one of the lines was like, humans can harm and humans can heal. And I was like, okay, I really like that, because every book I read on dirt is like super pessimistic and super like Debbie Downer. It's always just like we're screwed. Once carbon or once our soil goes to shit, we're all going to die, which is true. But if we can actually get around this with, I don't know, promoting regenerative agriculture everywhere, then I don't know, hopefully we can get that carbon back in the soil where it's supposed to be and honestly save the planet, because that's how big it really is.
Yeah, I mean, regenerative agriculture is really the solution to basically all of our planet's problems.
Yeah, pretty much. I know there is so much to do with, I don't know if we'll ever touch on it because it's political and it's super complicated, but global warming. And one of the books I read on soil talked about how with more carbon in the soil, like Tom said, the soil holds more water. And now with monocropping happening everywhere, the soil is just losing carbon by the ton literally every day, and with that carbon goes water. And that this global warming really is less to do about carbon and more to do with water and where water is and where water goes. So it's about a water cycle, and I've always wanted to look into it more because I think it's super interesting. And I have a paper on it, like on my laptop, but it's like 100 pages, and I've tried to read it and it's just so over my head that I can't, like, I really don't think I'll be able to break it down to any sort of digestible form. So I don't know if we'll ever cover it. But the point is, regenerative agriculture fixes that problem too with the water cycle. So if you're a skeptic out there with global warming and just carbon in the atmosphere, if you're like, no, the data says X, Y, and Z, there might be something to that. But your argument would probably be about the water cycle. And regenerative agriculture fixes that too. So it does both things.
So I think we pretty much broke down everything. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to touch on real quick is because this movie made a point. This is me maybe being a contrarian, I don't know. But it's been kind of grain-fed and big factory farming animals. Like, you know, they always talk about these big, like, beef operations. There's one in California. What's a big one in California driving to L.A.? Do you remember the name of it?
I can't think of it right off the top
of my head. Me either, but everyone knows it. If everyone's ever lived in California and drove from either NorCal to SoCal or the opposite, you drive past a huge cow farm. It's one of the biggest ones in the nation. But they just spin that into such a negative thing, like factory farm beef and grain-fed beef and all this type of stuff. And it's not that I'm really pro factory farming, because I know it comes with a ton of pitfalls. Trust me, I get it. But there's an argument that there is a ton of people on the planet. We do need to produce a ton of just pure calories to feed these people. It might as well be nutrient-dense beef. And on top of that, in these factory farms where beef are fed other things besides grass, they're fed things like, I don't know, like when you have orange juice, you go to the orange juice aisle, you see pulp-free orange juice. Where do you think that pulp goes? We feed it to cows. If you ever get almond milk, like where do you think the almond husks go? It goes to cows. When you see canola oil, those husks from the rape seeds, those go to cows. So if we don't feed those to cows, like if every cow on earth was 100% grass-fed, people are still going to make canola oil. People are still going to make pulp-free orange juice. And that's just a very small list. We feed a ton of crap to cows. All that stuff either needs to be, we need to come up with new ways to recycle it, which might be a good argument. I don't know the science behind that. Or it's just going to go into a landfill. And I don't think that's a good solution either. Like no one ever talks about that angle.
So in the book, it does kind of talk about that. And it also talks about how the nutritional differences between the two really isn't that big of a deal. So it does mention that in the book. I just don't think it made its way into the film. Because like you said, I mean, they're eating, so like corn, like a corn stalk. Yeah, we're eating the corn on the cob.
There's a lot left.
Rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot left, and that goes to cows. So it does talk about how just like, yeah, factory farming, especially when it comes to cows, especially because they're raised off of grass, like 85 to 95% of their lives on grass. Like that is still like a much healthier choice. But I think like the main point of this thing is the same. You know, instead of growing this corn in this gigantic field, why don't we grow grass and put cows there?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely a solution for sure. I think, yeah, just get rid of all the cows, get rid of all the other stuff. I mean, all the cornfields and put cows there. But yeah, that was just the only thing I saw when I watched that movie. And I was like, there's a whole other angle. And I get why they can't talk about it, because they need to make the movie an hour and a half. Like Tom said, they did mention in the book because they have way more just space and time to talk about more topics. So I get why they didn't talk about that. And I don't think there is a really that good of a solution to that question. So I understand why they didn't bring it up. But I did think about that when I watched the movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you're perfect. You're 100% right. Like, that is one thing. Like, hey, like, even, like, you know, conventional beef or the grain-finished beef. Like, hey, that still does have a place.
Yeah.
But what would be a better solution instead of growing all that corn and soy is to just replace all that corn and soy with just straight beef.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good solution. Well, all right. Well, I think that was a pretty good recap.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed the book and I really enjoyed the documentary. I mean, for basically a lot of people that aren't too knowledgeable about this topic, it's a really easily digestible, you know, hour and a half. I think what we watched was the director's cut. So I think what actually ends up coming out, like mass produced, might even be shorter, might be knocked down to an hour. So yeah, it's really easily digestible. Sacred Cow. Unfortunately, it's no longer free, but I'm sure it's going to be coming to streaming services hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, and we'll put a link on the website under this post for the book if you want to read the book, because it goes much more in depth. And also, yeah, just search Netflix, search Hulu. At some point in the future, it's going to be online to get it for free.
Yeah, I highly recommend the book. I mean, it just kind of goes into these topics a little bit more, and there's a lot of things that just didn't make it into its film, you know, something like me and Tyson just discussed.
Yeah. Well, all right, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, if you want to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider. You can find us basically anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.